Nearly 5 years after a suspect placed two pipe bombs outside both the Republican and Democratic National Committee headquarters in Washington, D.C. Despite a $500,000 reward, hundreds of hours of video interviews with 900 and some people, still no charges have been filed and no one has been arrested. There are unverified reports about a former Capitol Police officer who now works with the CIA as perhaps someone who could be connected.
So that's one thing that's just happened. And Joseph Hanneman and Steve Baker from Blaze News published this story naming that Capitol female police officer just a few days ago. But that's not the end of the story. It's blown up into something more complicated than that. So we're going to be talking about that because it's a huge story. But that's not the only story. Of course, the shutdown has ended, except not ended. They're trying to work out how to, you know, it's like trying to stop a train going 500 miles an hour and then, you know, things shake and you have to put stuff back together before you can move the train forward. So they're trying to repair all of that. But really and truly, there's so much behind the scenes. And one thing in particular, there was a conversation between Senator Ron Johnson, Maria Bartiromo on Sunday Morning Futures. And I'm just going to give you a hint of what Ron Johnson thinks, what he's reported, and what I'm going to say. Here it is.
Yeah, I don't know how Democrats can continue to say no. I mean, we had one senior Democrat staffer say, we're not going to open up the government until planes start falling out of the sky. God, I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, we all hope that doesn't happen. Now the shutdown is going to be stopped, we hope. But this gives you an idea of the wickedness of this battle. And that's one thing I want to talk about. Plus, Tucker Carlson came out with an apology for saying that he disliked, despised Christian nationalists. So we're going to hear his apology and talk about that because that's pretty important too. One more thing, we're going to be talking a little bit about the economy, what's real and what isn't. Pretty fascinating stuff too, so I hope you'll stay tuned. But first, you know, in Psalm 139, there's this wonderful, wonderful passage. It's all beautiful. I mean, it's quoted so many ways, not only for pro-life, but God's presence everywhere in the universe. But it talks about that we were created, that he knew us when he knit us in our mother's wombs. And so he saw, God saw your unformed body. He saw you. He knew what was going to happen. That doesn't mean he made it happen, but he saw and knew because he has foreknowledge. And he cared about you. He saw who you were created to be before you actually even became you. Well, Preborn Ministries wants to remind you that each one of you was made in the image of God and life is sacred. Life is eternal. You may have come to earth as an unplanned pregnancy. Many of you probably don't even know that. But whether planned or unplanned, your life has value. And every day of your life is ordained by God. He knows the numbers of hair on your head, plus he knows how many days you're going to spend on this earth. He knows all of it. Please take a moment today to thank God for life itself. My husband and I did that this morning. We thanked him for this specific date and day, for health, for good sleep, for safety, for freedom, before we started our day. And I certainly thank him for life, health, for heaven's sake. And when we invite you to remember babies in their mother's wombs, you know, those little babies, Bruce and I are older now, but those little babies, their lives count too. In fact, last year alone, Preborn's network of clinics rescued over 67,000 babies from abortion. And what that means is your tax-deductible donation of $28 sponsors one ultrasound and doubles the chances of a baby's life, at least in this world. How many babies can you save? Well, please donate your very best gift today. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, today I'm going to talk about all of these interesting topics. We're going to start after this little musical break with Tucker Carlson's apology for what he said about Christian Zionists. It has a twist, I warn you, but stay tuned because here it is on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice.
Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
But I just want to say at the outset, because this has been weighing on me, I did say something that I really regret saying that I didn't fully mean. I said it because I was mad, which is always when I say I don't really mean, when I get pissed. My wife's always telling me this. I was snippy and I didn't explain it. And I said something to the effect of, I despise Christian Zionists. And I'm just sorry that I said that, because I don't. I'm mad at a certain kind of thinking. Some of the nicest people I know are Christian Zionists, actually. You know, if you're in a car crash, they would save you. If you need someone to watch your bank account, they wouldn't steal from you. They're like really good people and sweet people.
Okay, so that's the first part. Tucker was talking with comedian Dave Smith on his podcast, and he says he's sorry he shouldn't have said it. Christian Zionists, by the way, are people who believe that Israel was promised by God many, many eternal promises that will take place, that have taken place, and will take place. They believe in Israel's central role in history. They believe in the second coming of Christ. I would say, well, yes, that's me. I'm a Christian Zionist. So is Ted Cruz, so is Mike Huckabee, so have been most Bible-believing Christians for the last decades, forever, since the beginning of this country. We have been joined at the hip with Israel because we understood, because we had a Christian Judeo background, and we understood Scripture. But, of course, the times, they are changing. But those of us that still cling to this old notion that God actually meant what he said and that he actually does keep his promises, we silly people, we are the Christian Zionists. Okay, so he apologized, and then, well, and then this is what he said.
I want to be very specific quickly about what I was talking about. In a couple, at least a couple of different occasions, the Israeli government bombed churches in Gaza and killed a bunch of Christians. And not an accident, of course. I mean, this is like a very high-tech military with precision. I mean, they, you know, gave pagers with bombs in them to Hezbollah. So like this is a military, a national defense institution that understands what it's doing. They didn't accidentally bomb two churches and kill these Christians, and they never apologized for it. And so I brought this up with a couple of Christian leaders, including the Speaker of the House, and said, like, what is, you know, how could, what, we're paying to bomb churches? Because we're paying for it. And the response I got from every single one was, the Bible commands us to support Israel. And I said, so Jesus is telling us that we need to get on board with murdering Christians? Is that what you're saying? And they basically were just like, shut up. And I found that extremely, as a Christian, extremely upsetting. And I've never kind of gotten over that, but I should have said that. That's what I was talking about specifically. We cannot support the murder of innocents. I don't care what the pretext is. That is not allowed in our religion. And if it is, then it's not my religion. That's not what the New Testament says at all. It's not even a close approximation of what it says. There's no justification for that in the New Testament, period. So I am distressed. I don't hate. I shouldn't have said despise. But I'm very distressed about that. And that's specifically what I was talking about. So I just want to apologize sincerely for not being clearer.
So what Tucker's actually done is he's apologized in theory, but then he's doubled down and actually added to the lies. So I just have to take this apart because I've talked so much about him. I'm not going to spend the whole show on this. You need to know this. I needed to know this. It's very sad to me. But again, it's exposing Tucker's heart, wherever his heart is. I can't even lay it at the feet of confusion anymore. But here we go. He said basically on a couple of different occasions, the Israeli government bombed churches in Gaza. There are a couple of different occasions. There's one accusation, and it's the Holy Family Church, which the Pope is the one who came out and declared that Israel had bombed that church, that they had killed all of these people, and he maintains that to this day, and further that they are committing genocide in Gaza. First of all, there's no proof of that. If I were sitting here with Tucker, I'd say, where's the proof of that, Tucker? Where is the proof that Israel bombed that church? I guarantee you, if Israel had meant to bomb, let's just take it this way, a Catholic church in Gaza, they would have been successful. they wouldn't have just fragmented part of it. It didn't even hardly touch the inner sanctuary. It was like outer parts. It was, and we don't know for sure exactly how this did happen. The Israelis did an investigation of this, and it looked like some piece of something fell off and caused this. And it makes sense because the damage is not extensive enough. Now, some people who were, I believe, externally, not in the sanctuary, but around, I think 3 were killed, something like that, which is unfortunate. But I've said this before. Please let me say it again in case you're listening new today. Israel knows that Christians, in, I could say 5 years ago, but and they still think maybe, are their best friends, that we understand just for the reasons I just explained to you about how our country has supported them. And they've been slow to understand it, but I'm telling you that after the Obama years, they did a full swing, full stop, and began to embrace and respect Christians who they understand are their best supporters. I know this personally. So why would they bomb any Christian church in Gaza? What possible motive? And if they really felt they must, why wouldn't they have succeeded? Why would it be such a really silly attempt, really frail, fragile attempt? They're just going to kill 3 people? Just what are they doing? It is illogical, and it's not true. And the Pope has not corrected this, and neither is Tucker. He's doubling down, and now he's adding a couple. Now it's a couple churches that Israel attacked. Okay, so then he goes on to say, and it wasn't an accident. Really? What? Where? Tucker, where is your information? Is this the Pope's words, who, of course, has such great knowledge of technology and war? I'm sorry he was raised in the suburbs of Chicago. I doubt that he has that. So where is your information? What is the, is it from Hamas? Because they say it. Is it from the Islamic world? Because that's what they say. Is it Qatari propaganda? Because that's what they say. It can't be anything more than that. And then he said how disgusted he was. He talked to the Speaker of the House and other Christians on Capitol Hill. He went to them. He was so upset about this when he found out that the Israelis were killing Christians and bombing Christian churches. Well, I would be too if I thought they were true. And then he says all he got from them was, shut up, shut up. The Bible says we have to support Israel. Well, that sort of defies logic too, doesn't it? You really think that Speaker Johnson and others who are committed Christians publicly have nothing more to say? Do you think that their total reasons would be, look, there are enough reasons that we support Israel that have nothing to do with the biblical relationship, although it's intrinsic, hard to separate. But there are lots of reasons to give, like they're our best ally in the Middle East. We have shared values. We're partners. The Islamists are not our friends. We could say a few things, not shut up, Tucker, shut up. I don't think so. That exaggeration overstatement discredits him. It discredits him. And the next thing, we cannot support the murder of innocents, rails Tucker. There's no justification. God doesn't justify that. Well, you know, that's, I'm sorry, even that's not true, Tucker. If you know biblical history, you know that God has required his people on several occasions to annihilate whole groups of people, and that included their babies, their animals, everything. Don't ask me to explain that, except that I can say that in moments of war like Hiroshima and Nagasaki, lots of innocent people were killed in order to obtain the peace. This is war. I think part of the problem, I wish this were the real problem, but I would just say that people like Tucker and most of the young men in our, and Tucker's not so young anymore, but most of the men in our country now don't understand war. They don't understand fighting. The critical thinking is just out the window. One last thing. Shall I repeat that on October the 7th, Israel was attacked by Hamas, Gazans in Hamas. And I can't even remember the number. I thought it was 3,000. Maybe it's 1,500, 1,200. Israelis were slaughtered. Speaking of innocents, babies burned, women gutted that were pregnant, babies cut out, beheaded, husbands beheaded, children watching the torture of their parents. So I believe that when somebody does that to you or your country or your family, by the way, Tucker, that you have to defend your family. And in the Middle East, they understand battle more than we do. We don't have that here. We just talk, or we just act like it didn't happen. We put up with too much. We put up with too much because we have no sense of righteousness or justice. God's justice requires the death of some people, and sometimes they're innocent. And so that's all. That was an apology that added fire to the flame, or fuel to the flame, because it was an exaggerated, he just was excusing himself with adding to the lie. So I'm not having that. And I would say to you that the repercussions of Heritage Foundation endorsing Tucker, their president, Kevin Roberts, and we spent a lot of time on that last week. I won't repeat all of that. I would commend that show to you from last week, so that you will understand. I go into a lot of what I think the motives are, the confusion spiritually from church teaching, but also in the world. And I hope I did a service by doing that. So you might want to check that out. But Michelle Bachmann is part of the Heritage Foundation's National Task Force to Combat Antisemitism. It's been in place for a long time. It's been a powerful group. I know lots of people in it who I love and respect, including Michelle. They've all resigned because Kevin Roberts apologized for making the video statement, but he never sorted the issue out about what Tucker was saying. He remained silent on that. He just gave broad sweeps about supporting Israel, but nothing specific. And so people feel that it was damaging in so many ways. So many people are calling for his resignation. The Board of Trustees, though, seems to be standing by him, and they haven't offered any comment or criticism. So and the sad part, I'll repeat this, Heritage Foundation is the most important think tank in the country for conservatives, a bastion of integrity and an intellect and wealth of knowledge, with people who go back decades in the country who have institutional knowledge, but also new, fresh faces, like Chris Rufo was at Heritage at one point. And not a lot of my friends, I've told you. This is a sad thing, but I'm telling you, even if you don't know them, it's a sad thing for our country to think that Heritage should take such a blow because people, you know, have removed donations. And if for some reason they fall, it will be such a huge loss. And if they even keep their position and don't sort this out, it will be a huge loss. Because Heritage has taken a position before this happened with Kevin Roberts that we need, and they have direct contact with the White House. It's a whole think tank of advisors to this administration. And their recommendation for the coming year or so, whatever projection of time is to reduce aid to Israel. Now, that didn't come from a vacuum. That came from somebody believing what Tucker Carlson's saying, that Israel has become the aggressor, that they're whatever, fill in the blanks. Believing a pope who's not honest. And here we go with another one. So that's the story on Tucker. Okay, so let's pivot. I teased you a little bit with that news report about that they would identify the bomber at the DNC and the RNC, would-be bomber, on January the 6th. All right, so many of you know all about this, but some of you may be going, now wait, that sounds familiar, but I'm not sure. So I'm going to play a clip. Jody Weiss was being interviewed by a news agency, and he kind of did a recap that I think is valuable. So let's do that, and then we'll talk about what in the world is going on here. This is clip 3B.
And talk about the actual bombs, because as we know, they never went off. Let's kind of revisit this story, because it's, you know, memories right now are different 5 years later.
Yeah, any bomb is going to have three components. There's going to be an explosive filler, there's going to be a container, and there's going to be some type of fusing device. In these devices, the explosive was actually homemade black powder using potassium nitrate, sulfur, and charcoal. The container was galvanized pipe, 8 inches long with threaded end caps. Now, the fusing system is where it gets a little convoluted. The bomber used a kitchen timer tied to a power source with some igniters involved in it. Now, the question comes up, why didn't these devices go off? Were they supposed to be a hoax device? The FBI and the ATF has said these devices should have functions. All the necessary components were there. The thought process is the timer's jammed, or that the batteries ran out of juice and did not ignite the actual igniters, thereby not causing the explosive mixture to burn.
So now let me reset the moment this took place. A lot of us were watching television on that day, right? And so when President Trump finished his speech on the lawn of the White House, and he said we're going to go over to the Capitol, basically. You remember that. In fact, we're going to replay it in a second. But we all wondered what in the world was going to happen. It was a freezingly cold day, and there were, you know, I don't know the number of the crowd. I just know it was huge. Against all odds, it was old people, young people. It was just a real MAGA crowd, but a lot of suspicious characters folded into the MAGA crowd. So they're going over because at the Capitol at 1 o'clock, there's going to be a joint session of Congress, and that is the session whereby it will be gaveled in, and they will review the electors for the election of the results of the election from Joe Biden and Donald J. Trump. The electors have to be certified, and that was going to be that ceremony. But we also knew that there were alternative electors because there were so many problems in so many different states, in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Arizona and Georgia. We saw such weird things happen. And so respective U.S. senators, including Ted Cruz, who kind of took the lead on this, and also congressmen, felt that wait a second. We have to stop and reconsider some of these situations and resolve them before we can actually certify this. And there was a window of time to do that. So this is going to take place at 1 o'clock. So what happened? Well, if you're watching television like I am, between 12:40 and 1:05 on January the 6th, police, I don't know what stripe of police, were called away from the Capitol to go to the RNC headquarters. That's right there. It's on the grounds pretty much of the Capitol. Not on the grounds, but like across the fence from the Capitol. I've been there many, many times. And this beautiful building, and the DNC has their own building. For some reason, there were reports of bomb threats, first at the RNC, or maybe first at the DNC, and then at the RNC. And that was weird. Bomb threats getting to go off exactly when they're going to start reviewing these electors. So it sort of set the stage for something. And no bomb went off. And as we learned later, the FBI had a picture of a video of this person who supposedly planted the bombs. But for 5 years, they kept telling us they couldn't tell us who. Chris Ray said, you know, it was like right-wing extremists. Couldn't be possibly anyone else, but many of us had our suspicions. And the timing of it, what were they trying to do? There were too few police and no National Guard at the Capitol. That's a whole other story. There should have been. If President Trump had his way, there would have been. But resources were withheld from those grounds in that Capitol on that day. That's part of the problem. But resources were sent to go find these pipe bombs and figure out, well, if pipe bombs failed, they didn't go off. So what was that all about? And it sort of set a narrative. Did it make you think maybe, well, gosh, this is serious. They keep telling us, you know, these MAGA people are going here to cause real trouble. They keep setting this up for that. I remember Enrico Terrio with the Proud Boys was arrested from his plane. He just landed in Washington, D.C., and they arrested him, and he never even got to go. And say they did, and that made the headlines. Just setting. Oh, I mean, it did. Whether they were right or not, which I know you know, I don't believe they're right, but they're setting the stage for you to believe certain things. So, this last 5 years, we've been wondering what. Now, Julie Kelly has written extensively about this and investigated it. Kyle Serafin was an FBI agent who was a whistleblower on this for various reasons, and then along comes Steve Baker and Joe Hanneman of the Blaze. Now, Steve Baker has been a hound dog on J6. In fact, he was put in jail for a time, I don't remember how long, as a journalist because of his work on this. No reason. So when Biden was still president, no legal reason, no legitimate reason, just punished. And Joe has written, he first worked for Epoch Times. He worked on like three different documentaries. I've had Joe on this program any number of times. So Joe and Steve just have been working on the story of who was this bomber. And they did a piece that came out about 3 days ago. And I would have talked to Joe about it already, except it's the story is not the whole story. But I'm going to tell you their story. A forensic analysis of a female former U.S. Capitol police officer's gait, meaning the way she walks, is a 94 to 98% match to the unique stride of the long-sought January 6th pipe bomb suspect. A source close to the congressional investigation of January 6th additionally told Blaze News, evidence has emerged recently that pointed toward law enforcement possibly being involved in the planting of the pipe bombs. They go on to name this woman. I'm not going to do that now for reasons you'll hear in just a second. But she was with Capitol Police for a number of years. And then mid-2021, she was transferred to the CIA. So we have, I'm going to talk to Joe soon. So I'm going to leave out a lot of the, there's a lot of detail here. But the odd thing is that the FBI was watching the house right next to hers. And obstructing reporters and also like Kyle Serafin, who wanted to interview people and kind of had a sense, like a sniff of what was going on here. The FBI would not let that happen. In fact, I'll read this. Kyle Serafin said, the FBI put us one door away from the pipe bomber within days of January the 6th, and we were deliberately pulled away for no logical or logically investigative reason. And everything about that tells me that they were involved in a cover-up and have been since day one. So perhaps we can get Kyle on to talk about this too. I'm just trying to give you the overview. They found all kinds of connections. They found a neighbor or someone nearby that looks to have provided not only a rail pass that this person used, Capitol Police female, to get where she needed to go, to plant these pipe bombs, and also that his car was involved. There's a lot of evidence here. Another part of this that I find fascinating, and I'm, again, anxious to talk to Joe about this, a Capitol Police surveillance video shows this woman and other Capitol policemen repeatedly using lethal force on January 6th crowd, who, of course, didn't have weapons. At least 16 members of the early crowd on the Capitol's West Plaza were shot above the waistline with kinetic impact projectiles fired from above on the tower of the lower West Terrace, which it sounds like they're indicating that she was involved in that. So they've been doing all of these investigations. You might remember that former FBI Director Christopher Wray claimed that the Bureau conducted an exhaustive investigation. In congressional testimony, Chris Wray said, January 6th was an indictment of right-wing domestic violent extremists. He said white supremacy-fueled domestic violent extremism is one of the major threats to the nation. That was his testimony. Didn't remember about the pipe bomb. They just couldn't quite figure that out. But at the same time that they were not solving that, they were carrying out the largest investigation in history to hunt down people like you. Moms and pops and grandmas and grandpas who were in the vicinity of January 6th in Washington, D.C. on that day. So I'm going to leave that there for a minute. Let's just say the person has been identified, according to Steve Baker and Joseph Hanneman. All right, so we can be certain that there's been a lot of messing around with the message on J6. You know, there's been a lot of nefarious characters, but who would have thought that it included bad actors overseas? Let's listen to Brett Baer, Fox News, clip 6.
There is new fallout tonight over accusations of media bias in Great Britain. Two top executives at the British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, are out over edits to a speech by President Trump included in a documentary. Now the company is facing a legal threat. Senior foreign affairs correspondent Greg Palcott has the story tonight from London.
Turmoil at Britain's premier broadcaster, with President Trump right in the middle. The Director General of the BBC, Tim Davey, and the CEO of BBC News, Deborah Turnis, resigning, all because of edits in a documentary of the speech President Trump made on January 6, 2021, implying a much more direct call for violence, which followed at the Capitol. Here's the BBC version.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight.
We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
Here's how Trump started, at least in the original.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them.
The edits flagged by an internal BBC watchdog, first reported by the UK Telegraph newspaper. President Trump posting, "Thank you to the Telegraph for exposing these corrupt journalists. These are very dishonest people who try to step on the scales of a presidential election." The BBC apologized to Parliament.
We should have acted earlier and taken a more formal position on it.
The network is mostly paid for by the public. It's been accused of institutional bias. The ex-BBC News CEO defended the reporting.
Our journalists are hardworking people who strive for impartiality, and I will stand by their journalism.
The White House isn't through. Lawyers for the president sending a letter to the BBC demanding a retraction, his own apology, some kind of compensation, and threatening a lawsuit of $1 billion if the BBC doesn't deliver.
So, yeah, the BBC reporters have to be very hardworking because you have to work hard to edit clips and make up stories and alter news. And that's what they do. And I know that. When I was in D.C., I was on BBC several times, and they treated me like, I can't think of a nice word. They treated me badly. I was the president of Concerned Women for America, and they hated me. Now, you wonder why the Brits, not so much now, there's a lot of Brits who've awakened to what's happening in their country. But I can tell you, they've been getting they only have one outlet. It's the BBC. That's what they depend on for their news. They don't have talk radio like we do, nothing like what we do. They don't have a free flow of information. And I remember when I was in Scotland with my son Jeremy and Liesl, which is part of Great Britain, of course, I got into it with my son's landlord's wife hated Trump. In Scotland, she hated Trump. Well, no wonder, because they don't get the truth. So let's go back to what these hardworking BBC reporters did. I want to play again. This is let's do this. Let's play the unedited short clip of President Trump speaking before they went to the Capitol. And this would be, now just listen carefully, this is 6B.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them.
Quintessential Trump, you know, and he said a lot more. We've got the full clip, actually, which I might play in a second here. So what did the BBC say? That he said, we're going to go over and cheer on. We might not be cheering for some of them, but we're going to go cheer them on. And I'm going to go with you. And so the BBC changed it. And this was their little version of it. This is 6A.
We're going to walk down to the Capitol, and I'll be there with you, and we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
Do you hear the music under it? So can you understand why millions of Brits think that President Trump is, like, out of control? By the way, I have to do an aside, because I don't think I mentioned this on the last podcast. Jeremy Corbyn is the former Prime Minister of Great Britain. Actually, did a fundraiser for Mamdani and the mayor of the city. He had a whole bunch of people he included. They raised money for him. That's not legal, ladies and gentlemen. And that's one of the former prime ministers of Great Britain. Okay, so there's a problem, Houston. And before we leave this subject of how President Trump has been maligned, and the thing of it is, it's not just about President Trump. It is about our country. The destruction that people have done to our country and to American citizens who have a right to protest, have a right to go to their capital, have always had that right. This is what President Trump actually said. This is the full unedited. It's only a minute, a little more than a minute. It's from C-SPAN. They so far have managed to keep it honest. So what did your president say on that day before the pipe bombs were felt and before the news started barking insurrection by, I think, 1:05, they were talking insurrectionists. They had it all worked out. What did President Trump had to say? And you listen and see if you think he cooperated with any kind of insurrection. Let's listen.
Now it is up to Congress to confront this egregious assault on our democracy. And after this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down.
We're going to walk down anyone you want, but I think right here we're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them. Because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong. We have come to demand that Congress do the right thing and only count the electors who have been lawfully slated. Lawfully slated. I know that everyone here will soon be marching over to the Capitol building to peacefully and patriotically make your voices heard. Today we will see whether Republicans stand strong for integrity of our elections, but whether or not they stand strong for our country. Our country.
There's nothing wrong with what he said, and you know it was messed up. They left out other outlets like I'm not sure if it's CNN, but those types, probably CNN for sure, but I can't say for sure. Left out patriotically and peacefully, left that out and twisted his words. And so, but that's the truth. I just gave you the unfiltered truth, which I believe is important, don't you? All right, well, there's one more thing I want to talk to you about. We're going to take a very short break, but when we come back, I have something about the shutdown I want to share that I think is very important. I'm not going to go into all the details of the shutdown, of reopening the government, but I want to make this one point, and I'll do that right after this.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
It's the end of the year. Well, did you know it's the end of the year? And we do have to start thinking about how to make the most of our tax-deductible contributions to your church or to whatever ministry that you believe in, to whatever 501c3 you're involved in or want to prosper. And certainly preborn. For those of you that are regular donors to preborn, you think about that. I'm sure that you do. Maybe some of you only give at the end of the year. I don't know. But preborn, of course, does just marvelous work in saving the lives of babies and really potentially redeeming the future and the eternity of the moms. I love it. So at this time of year, where sometimes we give bigger gifts if we're able, it's possible to provide an entire ultrasound machine for one of these preborn clinics for $15,000. I mean, that's like a permanent gift, and a permanent gift that would save, I don't know, countless babies and countless moms. Not again, you know, I'm talking about spiritually. It would save their mental health, their life, their future if they listen to the counseling they get at preborn. And so if you would like to help at this end of the year and you have the money to give generously, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Meanwhile, the 40-day shutdown sparking President Trump to call for the elimination of the 60-vote filibuster, which Senate Majority Leader John Thune is against, fearing that Democrats will use it to pass their agenda without Republicans' input in the future. But this is something Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt told us to expect regardless. She said it here last week. Watch.
Again, these are radical left lunatics in charge of the Democrat Party today, and they will nuke the filibuster. They want to make Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico states. They want to pack the Supreme Court. They don't care about our sacred institutions in our country. And so Republicans need to play tough, and they need to play smart, and that's what President Trump thinks.
All right, there was Maria Bartiromo setting up a conversation with Senator Ron Johnson, followed by Caroline Leavitt making her comments at a press conference on the filibuster and the shutdown. Okay, so the shutdown is, for all purposes, over, although it's not, everything's not reinstated yet. But in the midst of all of it came this, I believe, bigger push than people are willing to admit, and I'm speaking now of Republicans, to do away with the filibuster. And I want to make a point with this that I think is important, and I'll do that in a minute. So Ron Johnson has been one of the chief leaders in calling for the filibuster to be done away with. It's a Senate rule that's been in place for, I think, I think, I want to say 50 years, something like that. And it is under reasonable times when things are reasonable. It prevents coalitions or parties that are operating out of ill motives, like they're not trying to help the country, they just want to push something through. I'll say like Obamacare, whatever. It can prevent that by the minority party, by requiring a vote of 60 in order to vote for the actual bill. That's as much as I'm going to say about it. But it's been an effective tool for conservatives and for Democrats also. But here's the deal, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I'll just do it. And I'll let Ron Johnson say this. Do you think the Democrats are going to, you know, honor the filibuster if they take back the Senate? This is a Senate rule. Do you really think so? Well, this is what Senator Ron Johnson thinks. This is clip 4B.
Democrats, we already know, they absolutely will nuke the filibuster. They purged the two members that to prevent that last time. Every last one of them in the Senate right now is pledged to nuke the filibuster. I can't imagine a Democrat Senate for a Senate candidate not having to pledge that. So when they gain power, and that's what we need to prevent, they can never gain power again. If they gain power, they'll nuke the filibuster to maintain power. So I agree with President Trump. We've got a lot to accomplish. You can tell by the way they're obstructing. They are keeping government shut because they don't want the economy to do well. They don't want President Trump to get credit for these things. So they will obstruct every good piece of legislation President Trump and Republicans want to pass. So we better act first. That's the bottom line. We will use the 50-vote threshold for good things, to fully secure the border, to secure our elections, to hopefully repair the damage done by Obamacare, transition to a system that actually works, have economic prosperity. Democrats will use the, you know, nuke the filibuster to maintain their power. It's all about power with Democrats.
Okay, so obstruct means that they are invoking the filibuster, which means they need 60 votes. Republicans have the majority in the Senate, but they don't have 60. So they are constantly blocked. The Republican leadership is blocked as though they would. Anyway, won't go there. And we know for a fact, as Ron just said, all of the senators are pledged to do away with the filibuster when they take power. We've got montages. I wish I'd located one for you. Barack Obama, AOC, all of them saying we're going to do away with it. And what they're going to do, and they're very specific, they're going to declare D.C. a state. They're going to declare Puerto Rico state. What is why? Because that'll pick up four more senators and give them that majority. They are also, they're going to open the borders again. Is that all right with you? Oh, they have plans. Think of AOC and Mamdani. Think of, all of these people that make chills go down our spine. They have plans for us that don't include our well-being. They are going to deconstruct and destroy this country. So this, ladies and gentlemen, is not business as usual. And that's why Senator Johnson is a businessman, very smart, very cautious, is saying, do away with it, John Thune. Do away with it. John Thune has so far said, no, we have to, it's an important rule in the Senate. And when we, if they take power again, we need this. Well, to me, that is a suspension from reality. Look at these people. Look at the mom dummies. Look at what's happening. Look at the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. Look at the mayor of Chicago, the governor of Illinois. You think we're dealing with rational people who play by the rules? If you do, you are just out of touch with reality. So Byron Donalds, the very wise dude that he is, who's running for governor of Florida right now and also a congressman in the Freedom Caucus, joined in on his opinion. This is clip 4A.
In my view, the next time the Democrats have the trifecta, they are going to get rid of the filibuster. They are going to pack the courts. They're going to make D.C. a state. So my view is, let's actually get real policy solutions on health care, on energy, on regulatory reform, on real immigration visa reforms.
Yes. And so to be clear, if John Thune, who has now got the government shut down off the table, because that was what was bringing the pressure to nuke, to do away with, eliminate the filibuster in the Senate. The pressure is off of him to do that, do away with the filibuster. Also, this is my theory. 8 Democrats suddenly, just suddenly, flipped their votes and decided to vote with the Republicans. Just suddenly decided, we have to stop the shutdown. oh, well, you know, 2 days ago, 3 days ago, they didn't feel that way. And so, of course, Chuck Schumer's taking a hit, which I don't mind. And I'm sure a lot of Democrats think that those Democrats have caved and given in to the Republicans, and Republicans have had a great victory. But honestly, this is what I think has happened. All of that, there are bits of all of that true. I think the Democrats saw the pressure that was coming to bear, the growing support for the elimination of the filibuster. It's this stark. They want to pack the court, open the borders. They want to give free Medicare for all. They want to give free benefits to continue all these subsidies to illegal immigrants and more. No voter ID, endless mail-in balloting. How'd that work out just last week? That's what they want, and a whole lot more. So if they can stop Senator John Thune from doing away with that filibuster, man, they've got it made in the shade. They will not, Republicans will not be able to accomplish what they need to accomplish, won't be able to do anything before the midterms about voter ID and cleaning up the voter rolls and all of that, because that's all in the SAVE Act, which they can't get enough votes for unless they do a simple majority. So personally, I think it's conservatives who've been, what would the word be for a Christian to say? You know, we've been whatever the word is, because I think this is taking pressure off to do away with the filibuster, which means we won't be able to pass important legislation like the SAVE Act to save our elections. It would do it. If we just passed that bill, we could strengthen our elections and do away with illegal immigrant voting, with mail-in ballots, and all of these stupid restrictions. It just restores the law. The House has passed this thing, I think, three times. It's the Senate that hasn't passed it. But, you know, they don't want to pass it. So John Thune is, I think, he thinks, off the hook with the pressure to do away with the filibuster. Moderate Republicans who, I don't know what they say. I hear them talk. They go, oh, well, we can't do the way the rules of the Senate, you know, so important. And when we take power, we have to have that control. Oh, really? You're living in a dream world. You don't have the courage to keep your power because you don't know how to fight, and you're not very smart, and you're very selfish. That's my view of it. I don't think Senator Ron Johnson is selfish. I don't think Byron Donalds is selfish. And there's a bunch of others that support doing away with the filibuster. So I'm telling you that because I want you to understand, look, I don't have this in writing. This is a hunch. I've been around a long time. I discern that the eight Democrats that voted with the Republicans either are not running for election or they're not up this year. So they were the safe people to vote. They're taking all this heat. So is Schumer. But it's going to give them a wonderful advantage now, because Republicans can't pass what they want, and it will be a bonanza when they do take power again, because they are going to do away with it themselves. Simple as that. And with that cheerful thought, I'm going to leave you. You know, I have to say, because I can't leave it that way, how can I say to you, without sounding flippant, that our God is on his throne? None of this catches him by surprise. None of the schemes of man catch him by surprise. You know, God sits, the kings of the earth plot and plan, and God sits on his throne and laughs, because that's who he is. He's got it. I don't know what it's going to look like, and we may have to suffer a lot before we get to that place where we can really have joy, and it may not be till we get to heaven, but he has given us a reprieve. President Trump is just working himself silly, and I pray for him, and I ask that you would pray for him too, to keep him from discouragement and exhaustion and illness and the threats of danger. Because I've never seen a man want to save this country and put more into it and pay such a personal price as this particular president. So our God is on the throne, no matter what I've said to you today. And don't forget that. I'm not going to forget it, and I'm not going to let you forget it either. Well, you've been listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. Sandy@afr.net. You can listen on any podcast platform to the show. And you can go to find us on social media if that's your thing. A lot of it, some of those social media outlets are really pretty good now, I think, of getting information out. And I hope you've discovered those. But you can also listen to the show at sandyrios.com. That's my website, and it's easy to listen if you're not used to podcasting. And of course, AmericanFamilyRadio.net, AFR.net. Go to the podcast section because we are part of the American Family Radio family, and find Sandy Rios 24/7. Well, all right. I want to thank Preborn for being our sponsor. I want to remind you of that year-end way to give to them in a special way with the ultrasound machine, but also the $28 per month to provide one ultrasound to one mom to save one baby. So just go to preborn.com/Sandy. All right. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.